is rapid star and older. The man who went deep in the mind, he looks and laughs and knows that a prince can mark a built at night, a Marcus Duke can know that an honest man's a born his mind. Good faith he manifold that, but oh that and oh that, their dignities and know that the path of sense and pride of worth are higher rank than all that. Then let us pray that come it may, as come it well for all that, the sense and worth of world the earth shall bear the gree and know that, for all that and all that, it's common gift for all that, the man to man the world o'er shall brothers be for all that, for all that and all that, it's coming yet for all that, the man to man the world o'er shall brothers be for all that.
Yes, bravo. Yes, indeed.
This is going to make your world a lot different than the one I grew up in.
You know what?
CITR.
Is?
Sure, it's over there.
And over there is where that sound is coming from. Right, Mr. Marconi?
Through the air, across the ocean, the first time ever.
Sexy and Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR.
Welcome to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. Or maybe you could be one of our podcast listeners, however you've decided to spend this hour with us. We're really, really glad to have you. So I don't know how many of you spent this weekend at the Taboo Show, and you may have gone to the dungeon, you may have seen some erotic art, you may have explored, had some fun, hung out with your friends, and had an amazing time. Well, you know, for those of you who think that Vancouver's a no-fun city, if you haven't had a chance to go to Sin City, it's been around for 11 years. So if you haven't discovered it yet, you should. So I've got the founder of Sin City, and it's been around for 11 years in the studio with me right now. I've got the amazing, the lovely, the sexy, plus I should also mention he's an incredible DJ. Isaac, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
You're welcome. So Sin City's been around for 11 years. How have it evolved from like the very beginning when you started to now, like in terms of what are some of the big changes?
Holy smokes. Wow. Obviously, there's been a lot of changes over 11 mm-hmm. years, some gradual, some bigger than others. It's hard to kind of boil them down to just a couple, but when we began, it was a monthly club night, and it, I don't know, drew anywhere from 100 to 200 people. So that's, you know, we had, we didn't have a photo area. We had maybe one little PlayStation going on. We had one room of DJing. That was in the beginning. Now we flash forward 11 years later, and generally speaking, most of our club nights, up until very recently due to a venue change, but we have two rooms of dancing. We have a standalone dungeon. We have more dungeon pieces than ever. We have huge, crazy photo booths with, you know, film quality backdrops and things like that. And our bigger events can get up to 500 plus people, with our average events being more around 300. And we're twice a month. So those are a lot of big changes.
That's huge changes. Mm-hmm. That's huge. One of the things you mentioned as well was about your film background as well, and the mm-hmm. fact that it's production quality. So it's not just somebody having a, you know, a fetish night, or just, you know, trying to be a little bit more sexy somewhere, where it's actually, there's a lot of thought, there's a lot of craft, and a lot of hard work that goes into making it really amazing.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the most fun things about running a fetish night, where you kind of start to feel blessed about being part of a community like that, is mm-hmm. that it's a very round circle of inspiration, because we spend a ton of work to try and create an environment that people are going to be inspired by, because it's fun for us to watch what people do with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then what the attendees do with it in return inspires us. So I work in film during the day as a set dresser, which is a set decorator for non-film speak. But essentially we dress the sets and make them look a certain way for whatever theme they're supposed to be. So we don't just do a plain old fetish night every single time. About half of the ones out of the year are, but the other half we do all these crazy themes. So we'll have a medical theme fetish night. Mm. This weekend coming up, we have our Wild Kingdom theme fetish night. We have a military theme fetish night. We have a sex and candy theme fetish night. Generally speaking, we pick ones that are going to be easy to do in a sexy way, because themes are no fun if they're too hard for people to pull off. And no one wants to go to a party where you're the only one that doesn't have that outfit, right?
That's very true. Have there been any mistakes in that way over the years, that where you look back and you're going, oh gosh, you know, I can't believe we did that? Like in regards to something that was really extreme that...
I wouldn't say they were too extreme.
In terms of costume or theme.
There were some, and I will preface this by saying there is only me now that runs Sin City, but there were two of us for a long time. My partner, Mr. Dark, has gone off his own ways to do... he's also a film worker, actually.
Mm.
He does special effects and leather crafting and acting and all sorts of other things. He's doing really well in that. But between the two of us, we had two different approaches, and we're always doing different things, which would mean we'd both try different things as well. And there's a lot of growing pains in there. Certainly, we tried mm-hmm. things in numerous ways that no other fetish night had done, some which we became a trendsetter on, but obviously some in others which didn't work out so well. So there have been a couple themes which didn't meet with quite so much success. Not really because they weren't appropriate. They were just hard to present in a fetish manner.
Okay.
Like, I'll give you an example. We had a superheroes and supervillains, which sounds like a good idea on paper, and people that are really good at costuming and really good at fetish can do it. But your average person, that's kind of a difficult thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So not that the party wasn't super fun. It absolutely was. It seemed like a little more to bite off than most people can handle. So we definitely scaled back, and we keep our concepts really simple. Like, one of our biggest parties out of the whole year is our Scarlet Harlots party. It's very simple. The theme is red. It's been our color theme for ages. You know, we have free entry for redheads. We have, you know, it's highly encouraged to buy redheads drinks. All our decor for the night is red. And we give away $1 for every person that comes in to a cancer research charity.
Mm.
And that's just such an easy concept, right? Anyone can dress in a red fetish outfit, right?
Mm-hmm. One of the things you mentioned as well is being also, because of the innovation and the creativity, being a trendsetter. And what are some of the things that you were the first to do in terms of the scene?
Well, let's see. We were definitely the first fetish event to have a regular two rooms of music.
Okay.
Absolutely. I would say there definitely was a turning point right before us where I felt like there was a changing of the guard. There was definitely kind of an old model of fetish nights, which had just, you know, I don't mean to slag anyone that came before us, because they held the fetish scene down, and what we're doing now probably wouldn't have worked then, right? Mm. But just things changed as, you know, styles of dress change, music tastes change, all those kinds of things. But we were definitely the first to have two rooms of music. I think that we were the most successful in making a fetish night which was very much rooted in the alternative scene.
Mm.
Because most other fetish nights, the music tends to be fairly mainstream. Like, it's very top 40 or 80s. That seems to be the soundtrack for some reason.
I was just going to ask why.
I don't know. You know, okay. Plus, you know, they play White Zombie and Closer by Nine Inch Nails. Like, that. If it's like the playlist that's apparently has to be played at every fetish night. It gets very boring. those songs are great for Fetish Night, sure, but when you play them every single time for 10 plus years,
it kind of gets monotonous, and 10 years is a long time.
Yeah, the 5% of the people who are there for the first time, it's going to be awesome for, but the other 95% are going to want to blow their heads off, right? But anyways, we're very picky about our DJs. You know, generally speaking, all of our DJs don't just DJ at this one Fetish Night. They have a huge wide range of other places that they've DJed. Some of them have been radio DJs forever. Some of them write, you know, very well-respected music blogs. But in general, all of them have a history of playing mainstream nights, alternative nights, all these things. They're super well-versed in music. And what's really rare is to find DJs who both like mainstream music and alternative music, because generally speaking, alternative people are really snobby about mainstream people, or mainstream music, I should say, and mainstream music lovers are really snobby about alternative music. They just don't get it. So being able to mesh the two and have all those crowds get along is really tough, and is one of the things I've been happiest about that we've managed to do at Sin City. We have this big melting pot of music tastes, cultures, everything. Excuse me.
How are you feeling after the Taboo show?
that killed me. We got through the show no problem. It was a ton of work. That was by far the biggest spectacle we've ever pulled off inside the dungeon at the booth, and I was the best dungeon ever in the history of that convention. Not just due to us, but due to the efforts of MVK and Noir, who were there as well. Hours after we loaded out, when I parked the truck, and half an hour later I was knocked on my feet and I got that crazy flu bug that's been going around. And I've literally stood up again about 3 hours ago. So this is the first time I've been vertical since Sunday night, pretty much.
Well, I'm really honored that you're doing it for my show, so thank you so much.
Certainly.
One of the things as well is I was really excited about the Erotic Art Gallery. So you did one earlier in September of 2012 now. But
It wasn't even that long ago.
No, not at all.
3 or 4 months ago.
Yeah. And then already you've done one where you got to do it at the show as well, which I thought was fantastic. Was it mainly the art that was at the most recent one at Taboo? Was it mainly local artists, or was it all through the West Coast in terms of the community?
It was almost all local artists, actually, because as with most things, a lot of details come together at the last second. And with a big convention like that, there's so many details that need to be covered, and it's a scramble just to get everything to open on time. Like, to give you an idea, all of the contributors for every single booth, they don't load in until Thursday morning, and the show opens Thursday night at 5 p.m. So every single thing in that entire convention gets loaded in that day and set up in a matter of hours.
So you had to basically set up an entire art gallery. And how many pieces were there in there?
We had 13 artists, and they all had at least 6 to 10 pieces each. So, to put it in perspective, we had 10 by 10. We had 60 feet horizontally and about 10 feet vertically of space that we filled. So we had about 600 square feet.
Wow.
And we got there, we had to pick up our truck that morning, pick everything up, get there by 12:30 and get everything set up by 5 o'clock, including hanging all the art. So it was the preparation that went into that, it actually went very smoothly, to be honest, but there was not a lot of time for, you know, sleeping on the job or taking breaks.
No, definitely not.
But back to your original question, there wasn't a ton of time for a broader net of call for contributors to go out. So generally speaking, we'll definitely be doing this in the future. It went over hugely well. One of the organizers of Taboo is his favorite thing that happened this year because, you know, I felt that our Sin booth was the best it's ever been, but we've been there before, you know, and it's always been fun every single time. Noir had a great booth. They've been there before. MVK, they had a big suspension frame, which was phenomenal, and it was super fun and drew giant crowds, but there have been suspensions there before. Same with all the booths. The only thing that had happened that really has never happened at Taboo before was this art show, right? And it was definitely a place where you saw people stopping, talking, pointing, conversing, all these kinds of things. So it'll be happening again. And, you know, the net for calling for contributors will be going not internationally, but nationally throughout the Taboo site. But in this one, it was mostly through Sin City. So it was more through our community of families. There was only actually about 2 or 3 people who wrote in that we didn't know that had applied to be part. And, I mean, of course, they were great. Thankfully, we had relatively few submissions that kind of didn't meet the bar. Pretty much, we were privileged that everyone who wrote in was, their work was phenomenal. So I was really, really happy with how it all came together.
That's really cool. What constitutes erotic art? Like in terms of for it to meet the bar, like in terms of, I don't know what I'm asking exactly, but what makes it where it felt right for this particular show?
Well, I mean, what makes erotic art is, I would say, something that's artistic and sexual, I guess, or sensual. And you can even interpret that a fair amount of ways.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really meeting a bar on that level. It's just meeting a certain bar of professionalism, right? Like, you know, everyone can get a free copy of Photoshop these days. Everyone can have a digital camera. Everyone can go and buy some sexy clothing. You know, there's a million startup burlesque stars out there.
Mm-hmm.
It can't just be a portrait of someone in lingerie. That's kind of not enough. So basically the bar is, it needs to stand out. You know, it has to be of some kind of quality that it's like, oh, wow. You know, whether or not you're analyzing it in any way, it's like, holy moly, this is really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it prompts that sort of reaction where someone will stop and look, then that's basically meeting the bar. You know, in these days, you can get on the internet and you can Google anything and it will come up with a porn version of that. Right?
I was just going to ask if in terms of pornography, if that's changed as it's become more available in regards to, I think we're going to really quickly take a really quick short break because I think we've got a caller and it's a little bit distracting. So we are going to take a short break. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be right back.
Sausage, pork, beef, cheese, whole milk, butter, margarine, nuts, and sausage, pork, beef, cheese, whole milk, butter, margarine, nuts, and sausage, pork, beef, cheese, whole milk, butter, margarine, nuts, and sausage, pork, beef, cheese, whole milk, butter, margarine, nuts, and sausage, pork, beef, cheese, whole milk, butter, margarine, nuts, and sausage.
Press 1 if you are tripping balls. Press 2 if you are planning to trip balls. Press 3 if all the balls have been tripped, yet you find yourself adrift amongst the tubes of the ether, dreaming of tubes amongst spheres that have not yet been you. Pressed 1, you are tripping balls.
Relax. You're not tripping balls. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM.
Howdy, folks. We're the Bitterweed Draw, and you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
This is Zach from Black Breath, and you are listening to the Flex Your Head show on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, BC.
And we are back in Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about Sin City, and it's celebrating its 11th year. And I've got Isaac, or shall I say DJ Pandemonium, which I did not say at the beginning. So welcome back to the show.
Thanks.
You're welcome. I wasn't sure which name I should call you because
I go by Isaac. DJ Pandemonium is a crazy weird name.
Okay.
It looks good on a poster, but it sounds really weird to call someone that in person. So,
yeah, that's true. And I just wanted to say a really great shout out to Rosie Petals, who just called in, who said that she loves the show and loves my wonderful guest as well. So I'll just spread the word about that as well.
Thanks, Rosie.
Ooh, I like that voice. You really do know how to work the mic.
Many years making announcements in bars, you learn to project.
Projecting is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So what's next for Sin City and for you?
Wow. We always have a lot of things going on. It's actually, that is probably the biggest question that we have on our plate right now, because I'm sure you know that we have changed venues for the first time in 10 plus years in the last year. Our home venue is shut down right now for repairs, and they're ongoing. It is a heritage building,
mm-hmm.
and it's a small club that runs on a budget anyway, so it's taking forever. Luckily, I've been a promoter for, holy smokes, 15 plus years now, 17 years, I think. and I was a sound and lighting guy for 8 years. So I have a lot of venue connections. Outside of doing events, I've also done tons of live shows and things like that. So luckily, I have a very good establishment within the local venues of the city and a really good reputation. So that didn't stop us for a second. You know, we were able to find another couple of venues very quickly, which worked for our fetish nights, which is tricky because you can't just have any old venue. But it's certainly become our time of greatest challenges. Every single event in the last year and a half has been far, far more challenging to put on in the past than obviously when we had a home venue that was the same every time.
Yeah.
But at the same time, this has been like the time of insane growth. Like, you know, we had our first international stage performer, Masumi Max, perform for us at our anniversary party last year. One of the biggest things that we have cooking up that I can't even really divulge details about because they're so crazy is our 12-year anniversary coming up. July 28th, the week before Pride. There's some really big stuff that's like nothing Vancouver's ever seen happening there. We have another new venue that we're going to be hosting our Sex and Candy party on February the 23rd, which is at Boulevard 22 in the Plaza of Nations. Later this summer, there'll be another art show and another fashion show.
Tell me about the fashion show.
Well, once a year we do a fetish-themed fashion show. We only feature 5 designers, and we present it in a nightclub setting. So it's definitely not a sit-down and look in your goodie bag and read the program kind of fashion show, which I kind of like, but I find that those shows, they're more fun to take in from the photos that result of them afterwards, whereas we prefer our shows to be like, well, these are the fashions you'd wear at a party just like this, right? The best-dressed models in this place on the runway, you can be these people at this party.
Yeah.
So, we have 5 designers. They always are a crossover of all body types, gay and straight, guys and girls. It's never just, you know, tall, skinny girls with long necks and small heads. And they're almost always local designers. And each year we do a different theme, and we go way over the top with it. Anyone who's been to any of our past events knows. Like, our last one was, my God, what was it last one? Was it a sci-fi theme? Yeah, it was. That was the Lust in Space fashion show. Right? They're always super fetish themed. And our next one next year is Halloween glamour themed fetish, which should be off the hook. I'm super stoked about it. Anyway, that's coming up. That's still a fair ways off, though. It may be as late as September. But that happens once a year as well.
That's really cool. I love the fact that the community is built up with local as well, but you've also got people who come out from Seattle, et cetera, who want to be part of the local scene, which I think is really cool, like in many ways. I know Vancouver Foundation about a year ago produced a study just that a lot of people in Vancouver feel really isolated. And so to hear about just like a really strong community is fantastic.
That's my voice going from coughing all day. I never really thought about it that much, to be honest. I know that as a promoter, I'm very aware of how isolated Vancouver is. You know, people will complain about how expensive shows are, or why bands don't tour here, but they usually fail to realize it's because we're not on a touring map. It's strictly geographical, right? Like Edmonton's 2 days one way, and there's a border on the other side. And even if you get over there, there's just Seattle, and then there's kind of nothing until there's like Portland and San Francisco. So it would make sense that you'd sort of feel that way just on day-to-day life as compared to living in Montreal or Ottawa. All the population is over on that other side. I'm from Ottawa, so that's where I grew up. And, you know, I could jump on a bus and be in Montreal in a couple hours. And this is just not like that here. There is nowhere else in Canada other than small BC towns around here. So I can feel that sense of isolation, I suppose. We've always had a crossover in Seattle because... Oh, sorry, I think I bumped my mic input for a second there. It's all good now. From DJing in the alternative scene for several years, before we started our fetish night, I'd already DJed in Seattle quite a few times. I actually had a monthly residency down there with the husband of one of the girls who's our resident DJ now. So this predates Sin City, and she's been playing for us now for like 8 years. She's one of our anchor DJs, and she's from Seattle. So that creates a pipeline right there where she's going to be, you know, funneling interest up here. And plus, 2.5 hours is not a very long drive.
That's true. It's not, actually.
Right? Like, if you live in the LA area, all the clubs are really spread out. It's very normal to jump in your car and go drive for an hour to a really cool event, right? in Vancouver, it's less common for us to do that here because typically all the clubs have always been downtown, and it's so expensive to have a car. Not everyone has one, and commuting a significant way to go to an event is not really part of our culture.
Not at all.
But in Seattle, it is. So I think it's a lot more normal for them to be coming up here than it is for us to go down there. It does happen because they get shows that we don't. I go down to Seattle for shows sometimes. But in the fetish scene, that's certainly true. There's other things that are some major factors, though, that you might not be aware of, but you can't legally be topless in bars in Seattle. It seems like a small thing, but it's actually a pretty huge one. Like, a lot of people come up here because, like, I don't have to wear freaking pasties with my fetish outfit. I can just wear my fetish outfit. It's, you know, this minor detail, but it's just one extra pain in the ass thing that, you know, a hurdle that promoters in Seattle have to go through. As bad as it is for nightclub operations in Vancouver, everybody knows how hard it is for people to get anything going on in here. It's much easier for people running events in general in Seattle. But when it comes to running fetish events, they have it 10 times harder than we do. There are so many weird guidelines like that one.
Like that, just unusual laws and bylaws.
Which most people that aren't from there wouldn't realize, which is one of the reasons we get so many people coming up here. So, again, one of the reasons why there is some pros and some cons to Vancouver. As far as the sex and the fetish scene goes, we have it pretty good.
Mm-hmm. So that's a huge difference, because that was one of the questions I was going to ask in terms mm-hmm. of the difference between other places versus Vancouver in terms of fetish scene. Any other places? Because when you've gone back to Ottawa, I don't even know if there's a fetish scene in Ottawa. So in regards to...
I don't know if there is either. Mind you, I left there in like 94.
Okay.
I haven't been back in a hell of a long time. There might be, and if I have a friend of mine who's running one, I'm really sorry I've forgotten it. There definitely are in Toronto and Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about Canada is we only really have like 5 major cities with, you know, extensive built-up nightlife, and they're super different from each other. There's no way you can just compare the 5 Canadian cities and say they're a big Canadian city. Like Montreal and Vancouver, completely different. Toronto and, you know, Edmonton, completely different. They're all extremely different, right? So Montreal has tons of fetish stuff going on in there. Some more on the map than others, but in general, I mean, that's a culture where they have a strip club on every block.
It's true.
And, you know, sex is more of a European kind of culture there. So they have a whole, like, there are so many sex shops around, and they all sell fetish clothing, and they all do fairly well. You know, they have international fetish superstars like Bianca Beauchamp. They have international fetish photographers that are from there.
Mm-hmm.
They have international fetish events like the Montreal Fetish Weekend, which are all based out of there, which could never happen in a place like ours because we just don't have that kind of culture and population feeding interest into it. There's been actually some international companies, specifically Torture Garden, which is a London-based huge fetish carnival and performance troupe, which has been opening up chapters in Canadian cities. So there's a Torture Garden Toronto and a Torture Garden Montreal now. So there's definitely fetish events in other cities, but it tends to be the bigger ones. But that's the nature of most fringe genres. You know, there's always going to be big top 40 nights in every city, but once you get into the smaller and smaller ones, for it to be viable enough to carry a club night, it's only going to happen in the bigger cities.
What would you say, probably the top 3 to 5 things that when people come, sometimes where you, like, just, what are the top 5 things that you hear sometimes that it's like, oh man, like misconceptions about the fetish scene in Vancouver?
Misconceptions? Well, that's a
good
one. I don't know. I guess we're specifically asking about misconceptions amongst people who've never been to a fetish night, because I think people who go to fetish night in one place are going to understand that it's going to be mostly like that in any other city, with some minor changes, right?
Well, do sometimes people mistake, like, where they assume it's going to be a sex club where they can actually have sex there, and
sometimes
you have to kind of go, hey, actually...
There have been clubs, even in other cities in Canada, and it's never been legal. They've always found some weird little loophole, but there have been clubs where, for example, the same person owns the club that owns the place downstairs, so... If you're in the know, you can get lit in the back room, and they have the sex rooms downstairs, like that kind of thing, which is completely illegal. But there have been clubs that have had that on the sly, and it happens. These are these legendary things. I suppose it's quasi legal. I'm not sure, but either way, we don't have that going on, and we do get questions. They certainly have that in some places in Europe. I've heard of this, and they do have non-alcohol actual sex play events in, I think there's one still going in Seattle. I might be a bit out of the loop on this one, but they do have the Wet Spot that goes on there. There are events like that.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the first things we get asked is there sex there? Some people are like, is there sex there? Wanting the answer to be yes.
I know. I was just going to ask that because I bet you get some people who are really disappointed where kind of want to.
Oh, yeah. We've had questions like, oh, yeah, well, I went to this club once where at the stroke of midnight, a big cone of fabric would come down over the dance floor and that was totally opaque and it would stay there for 15 minutes and everyone that was inside it could do whatever they wanted until it went back up. And I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? Where in the world does that happen? They swear that it's true, and actually we get flack for not having stuff like that, which to me is mind-blowing. Like, no, that would really not be legal in Vancouver. It's definitely an interesting concept.
It's a very interesting concept.
But is there sex there is one of them, and varying degrees of that. Like, are people going to grope me? And again, some people are like, I want people to grope me, and a lot of them are like, no one's going to make me do anything I don't want to, right? So those are a couple of the big ones. I would say that primarily the big ones. The biggest question we always get is, what can guys wear, obviously? Because that's the toughest one.
And what can guys wear?
It does take a little more effort for guys. I mean, you know, you have stores like Dare to Wear that you can walk in and there's
tons of stuff for women.
You got a whole store with stuff that's under $50, any of which would be totally fair. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas for guys, if you want to go buy an even remotely decent pair of fetish pants or something, it's like $100+.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a little tougher. However, in some ways, guys have it a little easier because it's a little more accepted if you only have one outfit. It's kind of like, you know, when you go to a fancy ball, a guy can just wear a tux. Whereas a girl's got to stress about her dress, right?
That's very true.
So it's a bit of a trade-off. But for guys, you know, first-time outfits, which are borderline, or, you know, you can wear a sexy cop outfit. You can wear a full military thing, not a half-ass, you know, camo pants or something like that. But actually, like, hat, dog tags, some SWAT gloves, you know, full-on shiny boots, all the rest of it, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody loves a man in uniform. Those are good starting points. Once you get in there, most people that are asking this aren't sure if they're going to be comfortable. All you got to do is get in the door the first time. Every time people come, the second time they come, they've amped it up tenfold because they get in there and rather than feel uncomfortable because, you know, of what they thought they would stick out because they'd be so underdressed and mm-hmm. they end up feeling uncomfortable because they're the least crazily dressed up. So they're like, oh my God, I better like really amp it up so I fit in better.
It sounds like when I went to Wreck Beach the first time and wore my bikini, where I spent the whole time for the first 20 minutes staring at everybody because I couldn't believe that there were so many naked people. And then once I felt then I started feeling awkward because I was the only dressed person.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, you can, there's so many crazy outfits you can concoct that are variations of a fetish harness, a kilt, leather or rubber pants. You know, if you want to spend money, you can get into all these crazy latex outfits that, like, they have all these crazy fantasy creations and things like that. You know, if you go to our website, there's 11 years of parties, of photo galleries on there. I can't even describe half the outfits because they're just these crazy fetish, weird sexual outfits. Like, you know, anyways.
That's neat. So can we have sex here? Will I get groped? And what shall I wear if I'm a guy? I seem to be the kind of the top for mm-hmm. newbies as to what to ask or what they do ask.
Those are some big ones. Will people take photos of me is another one. The answer is no.
Okay.
Not unless you want them to. We always have a photo booth that people can get into. But one of the reasons that we encourage people to dress up is that you will not show up on Facebook 30 minutes later. You know, the party's off the grid. That's kind of a staple for fetish nights. In these days where if someone whips out their camera and takes a picture of you, they can use that phone to put it on the Facebook in 30 seconds. And people have kids and coworkers and all the rest of it. So
it's a safe space for people to play, in other words.
Absolutely. That's what makes it great.
I think I may be coughing for a second. One of the things you mentioned in our pre-show chat, which I thought was really cool, was you mentioned when we were talking about music, where the club scene's changed a lot in the last, 15, 20 years, where before people used to go to a club so they could hear new music. And now they go so they can discover themselves when they come to Sin City and find something different about themselves and get to explore. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm 39 in a couple of days. And I count myself as pretty blessed to when, you know, I was coming of age and coming out to nightclubs and all the rest of it. And, you know, you'll hear about nightclubs in the heydays of the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. And there's always good things about every era. There's trade-offs and all the rest of it. There's lots of things I love about music right now for the technology. Some of my favorite electronic music ever has come out in the last year. But some of the changes are not always for the better, and they're just changes. One of the big changes has been that nightclubs aren't really a place where you go anymore to hear new music. Not like they were in the past. You know, it used to be, who were you finding out about new music from? Well, you're finding it out from radio DJs and from club DJs. That's, you know, you stayed glued to the radio to hopefully tape your favorite song off a frickin' radio. Or you went to the nightclubs, and some of the best DJs were the ones who had gotten a hold of the newest 12-inch that nobody else had. And what that led to is that it being a place to find out about new music was hand in hand with, that's where people went to find out, to find this era of like self-discovery. You know, these were the heydays of the crossover, new wave, the gay clubs, and all these kinds of things. And now it just really isn't like that anymore. You don't go to clubs to find out about new music. You know, you find out about new music on the web, all around, on your phone. It just happens. And you go to clubs to hear the music you already know.
Mm-hmm.
So while that era has kind of gone away, one of the really nice things about fetish nights in general, and this isn't unique to Sin City, is that you do go there. That era is still there. It's one of the few types of events which isn't about a single style of music. People are going there expecting to hear a big, huge range, to hear, yes, some stuff they know that are favorites, but also really new stuff. They're expecting to be surprised. They're expecting to meet people they never would have guessed they'd be partying with in a million years. And that's really rare. Most of the time, you know, if you're trying to drag people out to a bar and your selling point is, yeah, we're going to meet all these crazy people that you would normally never, ever party with, that's not a selling feature. But once you get them in the right mindset, I mean, that's one of the I think the best things about fetish nights overall.
That's pretty cool.
Super cool.
So how has it changed you in the last 11 years?
Wow.
Well, with your 39th birthday coming up.
Oh, that's a hard question. I don't normally go outside and look in. I'm usually observing everything else that's going on around. How has it changed me? Well, I don't know. Certainly, definitely my taste in music has been vastly broadened through hanging out with all my crazy DJ pals at Sin City. I've definitely, like, probably all of the most creative people that I've met through my community of friends can all be lumped together in that fetish scene. Mm-hmm. That's, I mean, not all of them, but the greatest single factor that they all share is we probably all have one foot in there somewhere. Definitely through all of the things that I've done as a promoter, as an artist, as a DJ, I kind of champion the underdog and the alternative events in Vancouver anyways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like nothing against the fantastic hip hop promoters and DJs out there, but in general, if a hip hop DJ, you know, stopped DJing tomorrow, they'd be replaced by five others at the snap of a finger. Whereas there's a couple, you know, it's nice being a person in a scene where it's like, if you stop doing it, that void would be really hard to fill. And I've somehow found myself in this position where I have an outlet to help make that kind of thing happen. So I don't know. I would say that, you know, it definitely has validated my efforts more than any of the other scenes that I've been in. You know, some of my other nights have run for much longer and they're much smaller, but they certainly haven't sort of become like a national benchmark. Like there's ex Sin City people who have gone to Germany and started fetish nights based on Sin City now, you know, like it is an international thing.
That's pretty amazing.
Yep.
Yeah.
I know my mind is pretty blown when I hear things like that.
That's really cool. In terms of, and I'm going to go back to the fact that Vancouver sometimes can be really isolating, and I love mm-hmm. that you brought up just even on a geographical level, it makes so much sense.
Mm-hmm.
Have, it's just since starting Sin City and building the community where it's inclusive, have you found that just people have told you that it just feels really good where they actually can just be themselves and actually be accepted as themselves and still party and have a good time?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that that's going to generally be the case at most fetish nights anywhere. However, I think it's going to matter to people more when there's less of that for options in their home city. You know, if you're in a city where there's dozens of places you can go for that, it's probably not going to be as special as a thing. But I do think that all fetish nights, that's one of their inherent things, is that they always have that, and that feels great for people. But I guess in Vancouver, that's a bit true, actually. I think that there's more cross-genre things going on now. I think actually the club scene in general has become a bit more of a melting pot than it was, because there was a long time when it was like Fridays and Saturday nights were dominated by house and hip-hop. Not house plus top 40 plus 80s, just house music. And same with hip-hop. I tried to get, like, you know, let's just play a little bit of this and do a couple of different genres, and no club owners wanted to budge on it. Now that's the norm. Friday and Saturday night, you go anywhere, it's mashup night. They just play any damn thing. It's like 80s house, electro, hip-hop, 70s, like, whatever. And at this point, because DJ culture is so well-established and so cheap and the music is free, usually they have half-decent DJs that can jump around in those genres and still rock the party and have it have some kind of flow. So I think it's a little less unique now in terms of music to find that kind of mixed music genre. But to have that in a place where there's also a mixed personality genre is a different thing too. So I definitely have people say that. I mean, that's one of the most rewarding things. You know, I've had people tell me, "Oh, Sin City saved our marriage." I'm like, "Oh my god." I hear that, but on the same, you know, it, within Sin City's a night that I, you know, I make posters for, I DJ at, I pour my heart, blood, and soul in. I'm not out to save anyone's marriage. I'm just there to put on a really, really good event, right? If that's a byproduct of it, that's fantastic. But it's certainly not anything I could have ever predicted or specifically planned for. But yeah, the since we started, the response has been phenomenal. So definitely the answer to that question is yes. The feedback is what makes it keep going.
What constitutes a fetish?
Well, there's a couple of different ways you can interpret that, because I specifically work to put on a fetish club night, and a fetish club night is not the same thing as a fetish. Like, a fetish is, I can't remember what the exact dictionary definition is, but it's to imbue a sexual desire in something that otherwise does not have a sexual factor, right? So you know, being super into shoes or something like that in a sexual manner. That's what is a fetish. That's not really the same thing as what we do as a fetish night, because it's not opening the doors to anyone with a fetish for anything. You know, I recently had at Taboo someone ask me, well, I have a friend whose fetish is wool. Would he be able to come to your club night? And I'm like, well, you can wear wool anywhere. Like, you can indulge that fetish in the middle of 10,000 people and no one would even know you were doing it. He's like, he just loves being swathed in wool, which I can actually buy that, actually. That's pretty sexual. But in the context of a fetish club night, we specifically are creating a visually sexy and stimulating, immersive environment. So it unfortunately does have a dress code. But to me, what is a fetish is just being like interested in gravitating towards something in a sexual manner beyond what you would normally think.
Okay.
So, I mean, some people really hate their feet being touched, or other people's feet. I love feet. I'm a foot guy. That's my fetish. Anyways.
No, I was just curious in regards to what it constitutes within a fetish night. So, and thank you, because it was good. now, years ago, my old co-host, and I don't know if you know Julia Saunders, we used to do Juicebox Radio together.
Not sure.
Okay, she's a sex educator, and I remember there's one book that she owns that has all sorts of just unusual types of fetish, and I thought the most unusual one I ever found, or at least as far as at that time, was in a really small village somewhere in the world, and I can't remember which country it is anymore, but where the man could only get off to trees.
Well, that's an odd one. Like, just looking at one, or finding a knot hole, or what are we talking about here?
Wrapping in the leaves and rubbing against the bark.
Oh, weird.
And it was, I just remember thinking that was so unusual, because in terms of what my perception of was of a fetish, I had never thought of that as a sexual thing whatsoever. So it was really fascinating, because we did one show where literally we went through this book and put post-its all the way through for the things that we found the most unusual about things that we'd never heard of before. And I remember that one because it was really unusual and it made us giggle. So I'm listeners out there, if that's your fetish, I'm sorry. It made me laugh. So
different strokes for different folks.
Literally, in a different way to scratch an itch. Bark.
Yep.
And that was a very bad joke.
Oh, well, anything can be made into a bad sexual pun.
Do you find sometimes people share more sexual puns with you when they hear that you do Sin City?
Oh, yeah.
So everything turns into a Three's Company thing?
It's always like that anyway. Luckily, I mean, my day job, I work in film, right? So I don't really work in a business where I have to hide what I do. I'm generally surrounded by, you know, weird, creative people who, you know, it doesn't matter what they look like. And kind of as long as they do the job well, mm-hmm. crazier they are, the better, right? I certainly don't, you know, wear a sign on my back that says I'm the guy that does Sin City. In fact, it's usually about 3 weeks in to a show where I can overhear someone talking. I'm like, oh, geez, here we go. And it's at the point now where every show I work at, I can pinpoint the day where the word gets out. And suddenly I'll have 5 or 6 people asking me about it. I'm like, yes, yes, I run the fetish night. And no, all the crazy things you probably are assuming aren't true. But certainly after that is, you know, people start making pretty crass jokes with me all the time. But most of my friends and I have completely filthy minds and mouths anyways. So cracking dirty jokes is kind of a day-to-day kind of thing for me. It's not like I turn it up or down depending on the situation.
And, of course, my weird question after that is going to be, what's your favorite dirty joke at this time?
Oh, man. Some I definitely cannot tell on the radio because the favorite ones are usually not just dirty, but they're really, really wrong, and I definitely can't say them on the radio.
I'm going to have to ask you after the show then, when we're off air, because now my curiosity is very piqued.
Okay, I'll try and think of one for later on.
Okay, that sounds awesome. So where can people buy tickets for all the different events?
Generally speaking, one of the really nice things about Sin City is we don't do tickets. It's first come, first serve at the door. We are the only event that you don't have to buy tickets for, and we also have the lowest cover charge. So the only events that we do advance tickets for are sort of the big holiday and annual ones. So
kind of like New Year's.
New Year's, Halloween, and our anniversary party. Some of them, honestly, we're bordering on, like, Valentine's is so busy that we maybe should. But I really don't like selling tickets because what's going to happen is they sell out. I wouldn't be selling advance tickets anyways. And people get lulled into this idea that, well, I have a ticket, so I should just walk in when I get there. But the reality is it doesn't change anything because everybody has a ticket. So it's still first come, first serve, whoever gets there, which is kind of the same thing as just showing up without a ticket, as long as everyone else only doesn't have one.
Mm-hmm.
So generally speaking, I just try to move it to a bigger venue, which can hold everybody, right? As long as there's not very long of a lineup and the venue is big enough to hold anyone, you really shouldn't need to do advance tickets. So when we do advance tickets, you tend to be able to buy them at Pre-op on Davy, New World Designs down in Gastown, at the Gene Queen on Commercial, and Dare to Wear on Granville, or from us directly, or on the Sin City website.
And what is the website for those who may not want to check it out while we're on air?
It's super easy to remember. It's SinCityFetishNight.com, and if you can Google Fetish Vancouver and it'll show up. You can Google Sin City Vancouver. You can Google Sin City Fetish. It's so easy to find it.
Love it. I love the fact, I want to go back to the fact about just the relationships and just the connection and stuff like that. So I think that's the big key is the community, the relationships. And I'm just going to jump in there in regards to misconceptions. I think sometimes with the whole word fetish, people sometimes just think of it as just straight sex, where it's not about the relational part.
That's very true. I mean, we do have some people who, you know, they get their sitter and, you know, they got to wear these long black coats as they're leaving the house to mask what they're wearing so their kids can't see their fishnets kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then, you got other people where you have multi-generations coming out to the night. I mean, it happens, you know. Mm-hmm. We had one volunteer that was helping run our booth. She helps every year, and she ran into her niece who was doing suspension at another booth. They're all adults. And she has actually, neither party wasn't into it. It was like, oh my God, my kid's all grown up. Look how awesome she looks. Like that kind of thing. It just really depends on the person. I'm not sure what your actual question was.
I guess just in terms of is there a stigma about the word fetish? Like sometimes if people are not in just where they don't understand, like for example, when people hear about it when you're on set, mm-hmm. that you produce these events, and you said just people envision all sorts of things sometimes, and you're like, here we go again, like that, like in terms of addressing stigma.
I would say less and less as time goes on.
Okay.
For two reasons. One of the things that's really changed about Fetish Nights is that, the spread of information has changed in the last 15 years. I mean, when we started this night, the internet had just started.
That's such a wild concept, isn't it?
That was when, yeah, definitely. No, that was my previous night, sorry. So the internet had been around, but it was still in its infancy. We were just getting past pagers into cell phones and things like that, right? So when you went to Fetish Night, it was off the map. It really was off the map. You know, we didn't have digital cameras that could shoot in the dark yet. The only photos from club nights were people that had 35mm cameras with flashes that had figured out how to do it. So there was no, like, having to make sure there was no cell phones or anything. No, as soon as you stepped in there, like, anything goes.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it wasn't technically allowed, there's never this fear of, like, I might show up on Facebook. So things like that have changed a little.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would almost say that it was a little raunchier at Fetish Nights in the past because you were even more off the grid at that point. However, it was also a lot harder to spread the word about the Fetish Nights, and I would say that they were a little more cliquey than they are now because they weren't as open to everybody. You kind of had to be in the know. So now as time has gone on, the spread of information has kind of changed things quite a lot, which does mean, in reference to your question, that I think it's a lot easier for people to find out information about what goes on. So separating rumor from fact, you know, it's one of these things like when you're in a bar and there's a question everyone's arguing about. Oh, if only we had a magical device in our back pocket that had access to all the information in the world. Oh, look, every single one of us does. As well, on year 5, so that was 6 years ago, we started producing a couple of videos per year, because what we really found was you can describe to people all you want, you can even have them look at photos all you want, but really have them watch 60 seconds of one of the videos in action and they get it right away. So every now and then, maybe 2-3 times a year, well, specifically at one of our bigger parties, like the anniversary party, for example, we'll well advertise we are going to have our camera crew there. They only take photos of people that are very clearly know they're in front of the camera. For any close-ups, they always ask first. We never use any incriminating evidence of anyone. And it takes a lot of work to find footage that fits all of our veto guidelines. But ultimately, we shoot about 2 hours of footage and we boil it down to about a 2.5-minute video. And now, that was 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we have lots of party videos that reflect our party. And you know, if I've been trying to describe it to someone and they're just not getting it, I'm like, dude, just look at this video. You know, even you look at it for 1 minute and it's pretty clear what's going on. This is not a sex party. This is a lot of sexy people having fun. That's ultimately what it is.
And that's exactly it. Sexy people having fun. Because that's one of the things I do love about Sin City is there's pretty people there.
I'll take that one step further.
Okay.
I'll take it as a place where everybody feels pretty.
Yes, I like that.
Right?
Very much so.
And that's, I like that. As I said earlier, it's this this place of self-discovery that kind of crosses all genres and boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just see everybody come there, and when I see people coming out of their shell, that's the most rewarding thing to me. You know, some of my best friends, I remember, well, not my best friends, but my most favorite attendees that are now some of our hardest partiers, I can remember some of the first couple times they walked in the door, what they were wearing, and I could see them starting to amp it up and, like, getting more and more comfortable shedding off these layers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's... how did someone put it once? Some people, they put on a uniform to go to the club on the weekend, right? Some people go to the clubs on the weekend and they take off the uniform that they wear for the rest of the week. And that's what we try to be at Sin City.
And that makes perfect sense because it's one of the reasons why I actually like it.
Mm-hmm.
To be quite frank.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, thank you so much for being on the show tonight.
My God, that wasn't an hour already, was it? Holy smokes. I haven't thought of any radio quality dirty jokes. Sorry.
I may have to type it out later and actually share it on our Facebook page.
Alrighty.
And if we can do it in 140 characters, I can share it on Twitter as well.
Not this one. Yeah, it's more of a gestural kind of thing. Anyways.
So just in case anyone who is listening wants to come, you mentioned that there's one coming up very, very soon.
Yeah, in general, all of our Sin City parties, they're once to twice a month, almost always twice a month, and they're almost without fail on the second and last Saturday of the month. Generally speaking, the second Saturday of every month is at the Red Room at 398 Richards. The fourth Saturday of the month, we move around and invade several different venues.
Invade.
Usually it's the Electric Owl, but there are some exceptions. And the next one coming up is this Saturday, the 26th of January, at the Electric Owl. It's our second annual Wild Kingdom Fetish Ball.
What do people wear for Wild Kingdom?
Oh, all kinds of stuff. I mean, we get some furries, which is always fun. Pack of sexy wolves. We get a lot of bears. So we get loads of sexy kitties. Very commonly, we get a flock of super sexy fetish birds. You get super crazy feather creations and not much else going on. We do have a body painter on site, so she'll do some bigger pieces on people in her studio, but then she comes and sets up right there. So people... A lot of people will pre-book spots with her and just wear very little, come and then get painted up from her.
That's cool.
We have a couple of my favorite people, actually. They're super crafty. One guy made this crazy octopus head, which I wish he would just wear every year, but he looks out through the nose slits and the eyes strobe, and he's got all these tentacle things that hang down. It's completely off the hook.
That's really cool.
Yeah, super cool.
What's the most unusual costume, kind of like just the ones that kind of pop in your head first out of the 11 years that where it was like, whoa, when you've done a theme night and where it's like, I could have never imagined that.
Oh my God, now you put me on the spot. I should actually write these things down. I've been asked this before and 10 minutes later, I always kick myself for not remembering. That would actually be one of them. I totally, that one blew my mind. You got me on this one.
That's okay. Listeners out there, perhaps you want to share it on our Facebook page, or you have a Facebook page as well if they want to share it on there what their favorite costumes are.
Yeah, it's I'm pretty sure it's facebook.com/SinCityFetishNight. If not, it's linked right on the main page of the SinCityFetishNight.com website.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yay. And happy 11, almost 12 years and 6 months.
That's right. Thanks.
You're welcome. And up next is Hans von Klaus's Misery Hour. He is a very sexy man to be miserable with. He'll be guiding you through the wee hours with his ambient music and his super hot voice. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be back next week at the sexy hour of 10 o'clock. Have a great night, everyone.
Hi, this is Audie from Broken Bones, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. And all I'm going to say to you is, fuck off and die.
Fred Durst?
He's like Iggy.
You are sorely mistaken. I
play something from $3 Bill, y'all.
What is that?
That's the landmark Limp Bizkit album.
Limp Bizkit? Oh my God! I mean, they...
Wait, you don't agree that those are the most crucial grooves you've heard since Funkadelic?
What, Limp Bizkit grooves? Absolutely.
It's
I know.
The ultimate cross between Funkadelic and Rob Tyner.
Yeah, no, I don't agree at all.
Oh, you do not deserve a radio show.
CITR 101.9 FM, your crucial groove station.
It's just not the end.